Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this episode, we have a guest, Tim from Belgium. And normally, Tim, I attempt to say everyone's last name and I slaughter it, but I don't think that I'm even going to attempt on yours, and I'm just going to let you...
Oh, come on. You can't disappoint your listeners, can you?
Okay, I'm going to guess Tim Bossut.
Bossut, pretty close.
Okay. So, Tim, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, I'm Tim, and from Belgium, as you said. I've been playing War Machine for, let's just say, a long, long time, when animals could still talk, and I've been playing Grix pretty much throughout. I've dabbled a very tiny bit in Scorn, and I bought Infernal's army last year, but my main faction is still and probably will always be Grix. Well, we obviously don't get to play a lot in person lately, but I've been still keeping it up on War Table and having a lot of fun, so we can still show some experience.
So, you've... What other types of games or factions have you been doing besides Krix in your time spent gaming?
I started off in middle school, I guess, with Magic the Gathering. Then a store opened in our city, and we moved there for playing, where I discovered Warhammer Fantasy. I think it was in 5th edition or something. Or just before it went to 6th edition, started playing that. And after a few years, the store picked up War Machine. And we had a press ganger at the time, that tried to get people into the game, and it looked interesting. So I was playing, High Elves at the time in Warhammer, and also Dwarves, I think. And I asked them, I just want some glass cannon faction. They just have to hit hard and first, and they don't necessarily need to survive retaliation. And he got me into Grix, and that's where I've been ever since.
Okay, well, as a reminder of the format for everyone, we're going to chat with each other for about 45-50 minutes in the main episode, and that will be free for everyone. And then we'll continue the conversation in the bonus episode, which will be about the same length, and that will be for people who are backing the Patreon. And as a reminder slash update, next month we will be transitioning from a per creation Patreon fee to a monthly one, and you'll have to reassign yourself to that tier to be able to hear the bonus episode. So we have a bunch of questions from the patrons you, Tim. So let's go ahead and dive into them.
Yeah, happy to.
So the first one is from Tokenator, and he says, first set, he says, what are the hidden gem casters and Krix that people are not playing enough?
That's kind of a hard question to answer, because I think a lot of casters and Krix are good to very good, but that doesn't always mean that they make it into a pairing. But
they're competing with great.
Sorry?
They're competing with great.
I still missed that last word, sorry.
Great. The casters that are very good are competing with...
Sorry. But I think what the most obvious ones that people are mostly overlooking now might be the Asphyxiuses, because Asphyxius 4 is definitely a thing. And he makes it into a lot of lists, but that excludes looking at Asphyxius 1 and 3 in particular. I think Asphyxius 2 has a niche, but he's not quite as good as he used to. But I've played both relatively recently, so the first and third incarnations. I can say that they still have a lot of game, and they actually fill a niche within the faction, but it's of course very hard to give up Asphyxius 4 and his access to a mercenary jax. So if I were to have to answer that question, I would probably say Asphyxius 3 or maybe 1.
And what do you like about those two casters with their potential to or with them potentially being overlooked a little bit?
Well, as fixes three, still runs one of our best Jack builds, I think, because he's one of the few that actually makes them feel like they're not made of paper. And he also makes them fast, and gives them Pathfinder, which is very good. And as fixes one, can still solo pretty much whatever he wants, and has a solid kit in general. I would most likely play as fixes one and Scourge of the Broken Coasts, which is probably not a surprise because it brings a lot of tools and a wide variety of options. And as fixes three and Black Industries, of course, to run the Jacks.
All right. So the next question from Tokenator, he says, do you think the Nis Hunters will see more play in Crixx now that they are cheaper?
I've actually played them twice already since the dynamic updates, with the Negra 1 list. Also added Boomhauler 3 to have a reason to try and play him. I definitely think that they bring something valuable to the faction because they are one of the longest shooting threat ranges, which are speed 7 and range 12. At 16 points, I think they're still slightly overcosted for their rather vanilla stat lines. And besides Hunter, they don't bring a lot more than that. But the shooting is very good that they bring and something that is unique to the faction. The problem is a little bit that they compete with Crow's Cutthroats. And of course, there's Vixus 4, as was mentioned before. So I don't think they will make a lot of lists, but I definitely think they're more playable now.
So the next question from Tokenator, he says, the Wraith engine used to be very popular and powerful during the days of Ghost Fleet, then lost some appeal as magic attacks became more common. Do you think the time is right for its renaissance?
I didn't know it ever left, actually. I know that's... some people, I mean, I don't either, of course, but we don't play it in every list. But when I do play it, it's always been useful to me. It's true that there are many magic weapons in lists in general, but very rarely is it straight up guidance that people bring. It's usually a few models that have magical weapons and the objective only grants it for one attack. So with careful placement, I still get the feeling that the Wraith engine can stay safe or force your opponent's hands for a large part of the game and then really be valuable in the late game when there aren't a lot of things that can threaten it anymore. And in the meantime, it can just make your undead all that harder to kill and can maybe make a machine wraith here and there. So I don't think it should make it into every list, but I think if you have a plan for it, it should definitely see the table, and I would advise people to give it a shot.
What are some of the lists that you're most commonly taking that with? There was, I remember, he mentioned Ghost Fleet. Another one that I remember it being very popular with was, for example, Witch Coven with Banes, or, you know, some lists like that as well. What are some that you're currently liking it with?
So obviously with Bane, especially Knights, it's very good. Because it actually makes them annoying to kill against shooting. There was a list that I took to the WTC in 2019 by now. That was Scar 1 with a bunch of Knights and Wraith engines, and they've always served me very well. And especially because you have two of them, it makes them a lot more difficult to deal with. And if you bring Dara, they can threaten a respectable 13 inches. And they can actually benefit from Asphyxis 4 as well. So there's a lot of synergy within the faction. Lately, I've also tried it with Scabrous and Dark Hosts, where I brought two Void Archons as well, because it really helps there to have an extra big threat that doesn't need resources from your caster, and it makes your caster harder to kill from range. With Asphyxis 3, I would also consider it, but it's a bit trickier there because then you are sacrificing battle group models, which is a thing that he wants to bring. Yeah, I can't really think of another caster I would immediately take it with. But if you're playing in Dark Host, you should definitely consider it. I probably wouldn't take it in Ghost Fleet anymore, because there are other sources of Dark Shrouds, and there the arm bonus doesn't help as much.
Mm-hmm. All right, so next question from Tokenator. He says, what will be your pair if WTC happens this year?
I don't have an answer to that, because in 2019, next to Scar 1, I brought Scar 3, and I'm still exploring her, actually, because she's a very solid caster, and I'm enjoying her a lot. But in the meantime, I'm also keeping my options open and playing some casters that I don't get around to very often. And I always find it difficult to settle on the pair, because it's not always easy to feel like you're covering enough of the meta while also asking enough questions to make a solid pair. So caster-wise, we of course have at the top Scar 1, Danny 1, Scavarus, Scar 3. And in the themes, we have Black Industries and Scourge, which are clear contenders, but there are also some builds in Dark Host that I like. So some combination thereof, and then probably a second caster to maybe surprise some people. But I honestly can't say exactly what I would take. I would probably decide once I'm actually sure that there is going to be a WTC and that I'm going.
All right, so next question. What casters or list archetypes does Crix struggle into, and which ones struggle against Crix?
That's also a very broad question, because one of the things that I still like about Crix, which is why I've stayed here for so long, is that we have such a broad array of viable casters that all bring their own playstyle. And for instance, if you play Scar 1 or Denny 1, you can punch very hard, and that scares different kinds of lists than other of our casters. And in general, I still think that we rely a lot on our infantry. I mean, we of course usually take Jax as a more combined approach, but we don't do range very well, and we rely a lot on melee. So stuff that can deal with large swaths of infantry easily, so like Signar or Wolves of Winter or any list with a bunch of Archons, are always difficult to me. So there I will more often than not drop my attrition list to hopefully grind them out and catch them on a mistake. So that's difficult for me. I've always hated Signar, playing into Signar for that, because since Mark 1, basically, I've always felt it so insurmountable, because they can basically take all the infantry off the table in a turn. What we're actually good against, I would say, yeah, it really depends on the list. We can definitely make lists that bring the alpha and hit very hard. It can be very hard for some very scary for some opponents. But other lists we can bring that can out-attrition whatever they throw at us, and in return kill large amounts of stuff. So it kind of comes down to how you want to build your pair. I think the faction is pretty even, so we can build into a lot of things. But in general, I still think that we struggle the most into lists that can deal with our alpha or alpha harder.
Yeah, I know that I've played a fair bit of both sides of the matchup, as Signar into Crix and Crix into Signar. Mm-hmm. And it is one that has always been kind of a difficult matchup or bugaboo for Crix at times. But it also, in some ways, that can wax or wane depending on what lists are popular at the time or et cetera. So, all right. So next question from Tokenator. He says, if Hungerford called you today and asked you to make Ghost Fleet and Dark Host, especially the Banes, not the double Void Archon plus Wraith Engine variants, more competitive, how would you do it?
Well, for starters, Ghost Fleet did nothing wrong, and the point blank nerf should really be undone. But besides that, I'm not even sure if they'd still be such a meta boogeyman as they were. I mean, the nerf to Denegra was definitely justified, but I think Ghost Fleet got caught in the crossfire. So I think giving them Rot 5 base would be a good start, giving them point blank back, and somehow leaning more into the recursion thing, because of course they come back, and that's very good, but they still have victim stats, and they don't get a lot of work done. Some new models would be nice, I suppose, because it's a very one-sided theme, so some more options would always be nice, and that's honestly also what I would do about Dark Host. The models themselves are sort of fine, even though Mod 6 feels low these days, but they're just so damn slow, and I would very much like Mark II Curse, which was basically a combination of Boomhowler 3's, what's it called, Dinner Time, and the current curse, so it gave +2 to hits and +2 to charges to Banes charging a particular target. That would be amazing. But I realize we're probably not getting them back, so I'd settle for Desperate Pace somewhere, or a variation of Dinner Time. That'd be great to really give the theme some teeth again, because right now I often feel like they're taking the charge, or the alpha in general, and then dishing out a lot of damage in return, but it just doesn't feel quite enough when you have more options to strike first, or to just bring more tools than other themes. And the main problem that both those teams have, I think, is the lack of options. They feel very samey when you build them, and they don't have a lot of tools available. So if Hungerford were to ask for my input, I'd tell him just give us new models that are cool.
Yeah, that does always help increase the popularity of a list. One of the things that you said at the start of that answer was that you thought that the point blank nerf maybe went a little bit too far. What were some of your thoughts on that? Or what in particular was that nerf that you were referring to?
Well, it was in 2018, I guess, near the start of Mark III, and one of the first teams that we got was Ghost Fleet, and it was running amok, especially with the Negra 1 leading it, because it hits way above his weight class, and all the pirates basically had two initials, and there was a lot less RFP in the game, so it was very hard to deal with for a lot of lists. I can definitely see that. But when they cut their output in half, it really cuts, not even cut, but knocked all the teeth out of the theme, in my opinion, because now they're just stuck with a single POW 11 charge, which just doesn't cut it if you can't lean into your recursion all that much. So I really think it needs a way to gain some output again, and that would really help the theme, because right now it's a theme full of models with victim stats, with POW 10s, which, as Signar would attest to when they look at their Gunmage or Trencher theme force, it doesn't really do it anymore these days.
Yeah, I remember during the heyday of Ghost Fleet, I was taking notes on the championship game of the Invitational at Warfare Weekend, and there was a Krix player playing Ghost Fleet versus Jason Watt playing the Clockwork Legion variant, and I'd watched some of Jason's games up to that point, and he was just overwhelming people with his recursion, and then he ran up against Ghost Fleet, and Jason's army, when he brought stuff back, had a wait around to attack, and Ghost Fleet didn't, and he just couldn't keep up with the recursion and the attacks that Ghost Fleet had, and there was a pretty stark difference between the two. But yeah, it would be interesting if there were, like you said, if there were more attacks available on the...
I think it's also worth mentioning that Danny's feats at the time was a true time walk, because it took all your charges and your runs as well. So if you ever got even 1 point behind on scenario there, you were in a lot of trouble, and that got justifiably nerfed. But it changed the game completely, and I think they could have done with nerfing that and then waiting to see what happens with Ghost Fleet. But of course, they didn't have the time for that. They needed to do something, which I can appreciate. But I'm a bit sad that that's the road they went with.
All right, so next question. Tokenator says, which Arkno chicken is best and why?
I usually start with putting Death Rippers in my lists because they're cheap, and in a pinch they have a power 12, which is cute. But I would happily upgrade them to Night Wretches if I have some points left, because that power 14 shot has really helped me out in some ways. So the one that I take the most is probably the Death Ripper, and the one that I want to take the most is probably the Night Wretch, if that answers the question.
Why is that respectively on those two?
So like I said, the Death Ripper is cheapest, and you want it first and foremost for its arc node ability. And even when it doesn't arc, it still has a power 12 melee attack, which is fine. And the Night Wretch is slightly easier to get some use out of, aside from arcnoding, because it has a gun, but it costs that extra point. So sometimes you have choices you need to make. And while we're on the subject, I think the Ripjaw is fine-ish, but I don't like relying on crit effects. And if it doesn't crit, it's just a simple power 10, which is hard to justify. And the Defiler just suffers from being massively overcosted. It costs 8, which you can almost never justify over taking a 6 or 7 point option.
All right, so last question from Tokenator. He says, you said in private that you think Barathrum is the best Crix character Jack. Which Crix character Jacks are the cream of the crop, and which are the runts of the litter?
So obviously, Barathrum and Charybdis are up there, which is exacerbated by them being in our best teams, being Scourge of Broken Coast and Black Industries. So you see them almost everywhere. And usually when I start building a Scourge list, I start with those two. Aside from that, I think most of them fill a niche, but aren't necessarily great at it. I love Cankerworm, and I very much like to include him, especially when I'm playing as Fixus. So honorable mention goes to him. And the ones at the bottom, I would have to say probably Nightmare. I almost never play him. And it's not because he's not decent, but 18 points is very hard to pay for it when it doesn't do all that much more than the Humble Slayer and cost almost twice as much. I would say Erebus and Malice are somewhere in the middle of the pack, because they both do something you sometimes want, but they don't often make it into lists. One, because they're basically only in one team, except if you're playing Scavrus, because you can play Erebus always. And two, because they're kind of hard to leverage. Erebus has great stats, but he's only power 16. And Malice can be good, but if he's not doing what he wants to do, then he just has a single power 16 initial, which is kind of hard to justify for 15 points. And I think the last one then is Deathjack, which I love, but 23 points is a very hard sell. But for that, you at least get the highest boxes and armor of any Crix Jacks, and you can cast spells. So it's with some casters, such as Cavers or Den 2 or something, I definitely shell out for him, but he's very hard to actually include into a lot of lists, because you bump into your point limits rather quickly.
All right, so the next set of questions comes from BCCB. First question is, talk Gorshade with me. Which iterations are relevant? Which themes are they relevant in? If the answer is that the Gorshade suck, how could you shoehorn him in somewhere into a viable list?
First of all, I don't think any of them suck. So I hope they'll be happy to hear that.
I think he will.
Last year, I think, I actually played Gorshade 1 a bit. And a few months before that, I think Brad Park also did. We played him in Scourge with a kind of similar list. where you just spam infantry and play Charybdis and Barathrum to basically yo-yo. He works rather well there because he brings a mobile death and strength debuff for living models only, but still. But the problem I had with the lists is that he can't speed up his battle group. So it was usually posturing to take an alpha and then hopefully take as much back as you could. And then using, I'm drawing a blank here. The ability that lets you sacrifice your warrior model to replace it with one of your jacks. I'm just going to look for it. Soulgate, that's the one. So that's a very useful ability that he has and that I definitely think it's worth building around. I actually haven't played him since his fixes 4 got released. So that could actually help because one of my main gripes there was that my jacks were stuck in their 10 and 12 inch respectively threat ranges. Shadowmancer is a great spell if you need it. I used it mostly just for the stealth, actually, to keep my battle group safe. Lamentation is an amazing spell. Bleed is an atrocious spell, but Hexblast is very good. So yeah, I think he has a lot of options, and I would probably play him in Scourge, even though I think that as a tanky list, he has some potential in Black Industries as well, because you can bring a wall of jacks, and you can bring either Death Archon or Dara Wraith together with his Deathwalker can really make a tanky, surprisingly tanky list. So I definitely think he has potential. It's mostly that you need to make choices what to do with your focus from turn to turn because you want to fuel those jacks and you also want to cast some spells and always upkeep Lamentation. So there it's actually nice if you can get a free upkeep at least. His feat is of course very good. Bringing a unit of Banes, even though I said earlier that Banes don't have the best stats, but when you can put them in wherever you want and it can immediately activate, there's definitely a use for that. Even if it's only to kill a battle engine or a heavy or whatever, they usually trade up. So that's always nice. Moving on to Gorshade 2. I've always felt like he had an amazing spell list, but whenever I put him on the table, it feels like he falls just short. He has Abyssal Gates, Hexblasts, Curse of Shadows, Mirage, Occultation. The feat is not easy to use, but can really give you a leg up on nutrition in general. It's just that I always feel like there's something missing about the lists. You kind of want to play him in Dark Host because he has Tactician Bane, and he can make them faster or give Occultation, which is something they very much appreciate. But again, you get into the problem where you want to spend all of your focus, and you also have to try not to die in general. So he's the kind of caster that I want to play, but he never quite feels right. I should probably maybe try him in Scourge at one point, because you can also bring the Ogryn back with the feet, for instance, trading them for cheaper models. And then you just ignore the Tactician Bane because it doesn't come up very much anyway. But in general, the few times that he has worked very well on the table for me is if he's just supporting the army, which inexorably keeps going forwards, eventually feats, potentially feedback one of the Bane Warrior officers who could then still potentially use its mini feats. So you need to be less careful with them, which is always nice. And then eventually just charge something, freeze it, and let your army take care of the rest. That's how I think he likes to be played, but it's hard to always make that come into existence on the table. But I still think he's a fun caster, and if you feel like playing some Gorshade, you should definitely give him a try. And then, of course, the Gorshade Lord of Ruin, his third incarnation. I feel like his assassination will never be what it used to be, because in Mark II, Siphon Bolt cost only 2. So then you could really just spam it on a caster while draining them of all resources. But now it doesn't really work as well anymore because he's one of our few casters that doesn't collect souls, if we can. So he rarely has enough focus to do it. But he does, of course, have the ability to cast one spell for free very often. And I think that will most often be Mockery of Life. So he definitely works in an attrition-based playstyle. I played him somewhere last year in Dark Hosts with a Kraken, because it takes him for a machine very well. Two units of Pain Riders, because they're always nice to Mockery back. And he also appreciates Occultation. And I think I had Dara in there somewhere, some Bane Warriors. Maybe I squeezed in some Void Archons, I don't remember. But he definitely has game. If you can tell yourself to keep playing the long game and just keep bringing your models back, eventually your opponents will run out of steam and you can just roll over them. You can also use defeats as a way to keep him busy for a while. I definitely think he's a decent caster, but not necessarily the best at what we want to do in general. But in short, I think all three of them have a viable game plan, and if you want to play them, you definitely should.
He has a little bit of a follow-up question where he says, why is that Bane Witch Agathia trying to get into his Bane Factory business? Do you have any thoughts on Agathia?
I do. I've played her a few times after the rework, and I will always be a little bit sad that she lost Darkshroud, because now she threats, what is it, with Apparition, she charges 14, so 17 inches or something? No, she speeds 16 inches in total, and then she arrives at Mausheng 12. So I'm a bit sad about the Darkshroud, but aside from that, I think she's a very solid caster. Because Death Shroud is definitely something relatively unique in Krix, because it makes everything more durable, and she makes Bane Knights so amazing. The irregulars, of course, that you can always take them, which is very nice in lists like Black Industries, which lack a solid mainline unit, or even Scourge of the Broken Coasts, which does have a lot of good mainline units, but not necessarily ones that hit hard and are durable. So she brings something very unique there. And her henchman ability is just amazing. The Bane Knights suddenly charge 12 inch unassisted at Mod 8 with defense 14 and set defense. That can be very difficult for some armies to deal with. And then if you can stack the Death Shroud with their native Wall of Steel, it really gets to respectable values. That being said, I don't actually think she overlaps with other casters that want to play into Dark Hosts, because she doesn't necessarily do a lot for Dark Hosts. Her features grant stealth and ghost talk, which, and Dark Host already has mostly ghostly units and prowl on a lot of them, so they don't necessarily care. Where I think she shines the most, like I said, is in Scourge of the Broken Coast and Black Industries, and maybe even in Ghost Fleets, because again, you bring a very solid unit in a team that otherwise consists of victim stats models. I actually played her in Scourge once, and once in Black Industries, at 75 points, that is, where in Scourge I brought the two usual suspects for a battle group. And the fact that they can go relatively far, especially if you bring Asphyxis and then use her feats to be relatively safe from reprisal, while all your other infantry can just swarm around to block them off, is really a very cool playstyle in that theme, which is, as I'm saying, it's actually a bit reminiscent of how Gorshade 1 plays in that theme. So if you like that, you should also give that build a try. The mainline units there were, of course, the Bane Knights and unit of Blood Gorgers, because they can both easily make it to armor 20 in melee, which is nice. And then in Black Industries, I went for the tanky build. So I had Dara, firstly because he makes her faster, but also because of Mortal Fear, which are both very useful. And then I what did I have? I had Barathrum, because he takes Hellrot exceedingly well, because it gives him another +2 armor and pseudo vengeance. And what else did I have? I think an Inflictor, Malvin and Mayhem, because they appreciate the extra pseudo armor and the carapace, and they can provide a mobile roadblock for her. And I had Asphyxis with his own heavy, I believe. So it was really a rather tanky list, which is not usual to see in Crix. So I very much like her because she brings a kind of playstyle that's partly embodies Crix, in that she's hard to pin down and can go very far when she wants to. But also she brings a level of tankiness that is unique to see in a faction. So I really like her as a caster. I'm not sure if she'll make all of my pairings, but I'm definitely intrigued about her, and I have faith that she'll do well where I need her to.
All right, so next question from BCCB. He says, what are your thoughts on Deathjack Karchev? Is there a gap you think he could fill in Crix?
I honestly have no idea what to expect from him. I've been trying to think about what's a mashup of a Necromancer, Uber Warjack, and a Warjack caster from Kador would bring. But honestly, Karchev in Kador, for those that don't know, has Battle Charge, which gives counter charge to his battle group. But we already kind of had that in Venetrax. And I'm really not sure at all which direction they're going to take with him. I guess they'll make him a Jack-focused caster, because that's what he is in Kador. But I really don't know what the Deathjack parts of him will do, and how that will change his dynamic. So I'm really excited for him, but I really have no idea what else to say about him.
All right, so next question from BCCB. He says, Crix seems to have faded from the meta a bit, or at least avoided some of the hate previously piled upon them. Aside from the pandemic, why do you believe this is the case? Are there silver bullets that have made Crix less than appealing to play, or is it something like higher player skill requirements?
Like I said, I definitely think we still have casters and lists that can compete at the top, but the last few years I have felt like it's more meta dependent, because it's harder to make one pairing that can deal with most of the field. Aside from that, we are also one of the, if not the, factions that went longest without a CID. So while Scourge is still good, it's already kind of starting to show its age, because some of the power levels are starting to fall behind. And like I said before, both Dark Hosts and Ghost Fleets desperately want for options. Also, while I think Black Industries is a great team force, it's a great team force for Jax, and the Thralls aren't very appetizing, to put it that way. So I definitely think there's a lot of parts in Crix that have been neglected, not necessarily because they're terrible, but because they're not at the top of the meta. And if you still want to compete these days, you need to bring every edge you can get. And aside from that, I think after Denny 1 got nerfed, only Scar 1 was still sort of egregious, and people have simply learned to deal with her. But also, actually, the point of the pandemic is true, because lots of people flock to War Table, which I think is amazing, because we can still play, even though it will never be the same as playing in person. But the feeling I get, and I also make lists that way, is that it's not taken completely serious, as in you don't play the cutting edge stuff, but you play more of the stuff you want to play, which means the meta is completely different from what you would normally see, and it's actually kind of difficult to gauge what will be good. But honestly, in the past few leagues that I've been in, out of 16 players, I think there were always two or three Crix players, not necessarily the ones that would win the event, but to definitely do sort of all right. So I guess what I'm trying to say is Crix is definitely still playable. It's probably not the best faction anymore, but if you make a list with the intention to do well, you definitely can do well.
Yeah, I mean, if I guess one of the one of my thoughts on that question as well is that if you go back to a farther timeline of like Mark I or Mark II, there were times when I would go to a convention or an event where 35 or 40% of the field was people playing Crix, and a big part of that was that like the balance of the game was just not where it needed to be, and there were a few casters in the game that were just clearly too strong.
Too good, yeah. That's definitely true, but I do think that Privateer Press has gotten a lot better at that, especially in the second half of Mark III. Mm-hmm. Because, as you say, at the end of Mark II, it was just in shambles, and there were clear top of the meta, and some whole factions couldn't even begin to compete. But lately, yeah. I feel like there's a lot of viable builds, and maybe that's because they have a smaller team, and maybe they just get lucky, or they have a better vision, or maybe it's just because there's so many models, and it eventually balances itself out. But I'm having a lot of fun with just playing lots of different things, and even though it's not the best, it can still do well, and I think that's true in a lot of factions, especially as more and more CIDs are being run, and the bottom is being lifted up, so to speak. I think there's a lot of options, and that's very nice to see for the game as a whole.
Yeah, I am basically in complete agreement with you. I think that the changes that they've made have been good for the game, and that it's, if it's not surprising if there is a faction that is viewed by competitive players as being overpowered, that there's going to be a large chunk of people playing that faction. And so it's a lot better state for the game that people feel like they can play, whatever faction is drawing to them, and there isn't necessarily like this huge competitive reason that's kind of guiding your hand as to a faction or list that you feel like you have to play.
Yeah, for sure. Let's say Infernals, which a lot of people consider is very good to even broken sometimes. It's never so overbearing that the vast majority of players are bringing them. There's most of the online events, say the VTC that was in September, there was a pretty healthy spread of factions overall, except maybe Mercs, but I take partial responsibility for that because our team went with a meme format of bringing 5 Merc players, which went horrible, by the way. We all had good casters, but nobody could play them worth a damn except the main Merc players. But that was right in the middle of Merc Christmas, and I think even that is starting to fall off a bit as people are starting to explore more options. So yeah, I really think it hasn't been that bad for a long while, like it was at the end of Mark II, where, like you say, almost half the field was Crix, and the other half was probably Halley too.
Yes, I think that is fair. All right, well, we are going to pause here on this episode and continue the conversation in the bonus episode. As always, want to remind you guys to check out discountgamesinc.com for your gaming needs, Muzon Minis for accessories, and subscribe to the Patreon to hear more awesome content about War Machine. So, Tim, I want to thank you for sharing your time and your knowledge with us.
You're very welcome. It's been a pleasure so far.
Great. Stay tuned to the next episode.
All right.